This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and enter the code FILMSACK.
Today's top of the news comes from the top of the world. The unpredictable Admiral Harriman Nelson has done it again. His brainchild, a fantastic atomic submarine with an amazing glass nose, is now undergoing final test below the ice at the North Pole.
Where did you get that haircut?
This is Film Sack.
Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 255, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Brian Sweaty Old Men Dunaway.
True story. Oh, hi, Admiral, Doctor, Captain, Tennille. Do you know what my super science ninja team submarine needs? Windows and a screen door. What's that? No screen door? Just the windows then. Fine. But I need a teenage heartthrob to belt out a crooner and Barbara Eden twerking to power the sub. Oh, dear Jesus. I think we just caught the Van Allen belt on fire. Dive! Dive! Dive!
You gotta hit that annoying button that makes that sound. I may have captured that.
Doctor.
Well done. Also with us, Randy, I don't like the way that squid's looking at me, Jordan.
Aloha, gentlemen. Now let's get down to business. We've got a saboteur on this podcast, and I won't take another step until we've put a stop to these recurring disasters. Now, let's look at the facts. Each incident appears to lead us to different suspects, because we've mistakenly presumed it was a man doing these deeds. Well, I'm here to tell you that I've found one common piece of evidence at the scene of every death and fire and threat these last few days. Little bits of isoprene polymers. That's right! The culprit has been the Commodore's rubber shark all along!
True story.
Sadly, your representation of dialogue is damned too accurate. Also with us, rounding us out, Brian, seems like an underwater taser would be a problem, Ibbot.
Yeah. He my rubber shark.
Erwin, it's time for lunch, Erwin. Would you like ice in your lemonade? No? Well, if you never have ice in your drinks, you'll never understand how it floats, Erwin. Would you like me to light a candle for some ambiance? No? Well, if you don't, you'll never understand how fire can exist in a vacuum. How about... Oh, you're done eating already? Wow, you sure really know how to quickly wrap things up all nice and tidy.
True story.
Nicely done. Wow.
This was a movie that felt like it ended, or like it didn't end. It just stopped.
It ended in like in a minute, like in less than a minute or
it
something.
It was totally Star Trek.
Yeah,
I paused to go to the bathroom, and I saw that there was like 2 minutes and 41 seconds left in the movie. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Now, did it speed up for you guys like right before the end, or was that like a little
it did
Netflix
for me too,
article?
And I wondered if that was a Netflix problem. Yeah.
Okay, like people walking fast.
Yeah, they suddenly were. I mean, they seemed like a big hurry to get that done, whatever was going on there.
The editor at Netflix was like, nope, listen.
Yeah, that was really weird, because also this is one of those movies from an era, 61, where the credits are all before the film starts, and there was nothing at the end. It was like literally and we're out. Everyone just left.
And, it was a painting that said the end.
Yeah, it was incredibly dissatisfying, that ending. I hated it, actually.
It really was, yeah.
Like, get out.
I should tell people the movie. It's Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, a movie that would inspire Irwin Allen to also pressure Hollywood into making a television show out of it, which I guess exists. I tried to find that streaming and couldn't anywhere. I wanted to see the comparison. The only thing in the trivia I could find that tied the two together were Irwin Allen as creator and director and writer, but also... the set got reused because it cost like almost $500,000, and in 61 that was a ton of money for a set, so they kept it and used it for the show.
What a great set.
Yeah,
everything was shot on set. I mean, there was no location stuff. It was all miniatures or you know, scale models, that kind of stuff.
It was pretty rad.
Everything. Yeah. I was just blown away. Every part of the inside of the submarine was shiny and new. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, they didn't even borrow like one piece of equipment from an actual boat. They made it.
Yeah, they did. And it was all very Art Deco, crappy leather seat.
Yeah, not quite steampunky, but could have very easily been steampunkified.
Yeah, you could go in there. If you could go in there and scruffy everything up, like dirty it up and scuff it up.
Plenty of brass, and there's pipes. And
that would have made sense, because this was a brand new nuclear submarine.
But you set the nose.
You set the movie during the War of 1812.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This great inventor has come up with how to make a submarine.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it is Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and Scott Fletcher, I'm pretty sure, has a description of it. So we're going to play it now, and then we'll come back on the other side and talk about it. So here's Scott Fletcher for real.
Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Walter Pidgeon plays the designer and builder of a nuclear submarine called upon to fire its missiles on the Van Allen radiation belt to put out the fire raging there that threatens to incinerate the Earth in this deep sea adventure. Irwin Allen directs. Robert Sterling, Joan Fontaine, Michael Ansara, Barbara Eden, and Peter Lorre co-star. And Frankie Avalon, who has a small role in the film, sings the theme song.
For real.
Then not real. Okay. All right. That's it. All right. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. That was fantastic.
Spot on.
Nailed it. You can always tell when we might be recording before Scott got me a read.
For real. Least,
I think our listeners know. So Irwin Allen, he's responsible for a lot of this kind of stuff. Poseidon Adventure is probably his biggest, most well-known thing.
Towering Inferno was his too, right?
Was it? I thought he was.
It was.
It was.
He did the disaster type. Those kind of disaster sci-fi kind of movies.
Let's see. He is known for Lost in Space, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, The Big Circus. I don't know what that is.
The Lost World.
Lost World. Yeah.
You don't know The Big Circus?
I don't know The Big Circus.
You don't know The Big Circus?
What is the bit? Tell,
I know the clown is really sad on the movie poster.
Give me a short deal about that. What is that? What is the deal with that?
It's kind of like with the movie we just watched here, only it's set in a circus.
Oh, all right.
there's a circus. It's going to get shut down. It stars all sorts of amazing actors and actresses, including Red Buttons, who I know you don't like.
There's a great scene when other circuses fire at this circus.
Yeah. He's also responsible for one of our best film sack covered movies, which was The Swarm with Michael Caine, the bees, the African bees that came and attacked everybody.
Bees.
Millions of bees, that one. He's like the... Who are the brothers that do all the disaster movies now, like 2012 and Day After Tomorrow and ID4? Emmerichs, the Emmerichs. Noah and whatever his name, Emmerichs. Okay. So he's like that for that generation.
Right.
Everything he did was like that, pretty much. Yeah. Sometimes it got a little fantastical. Like this one is like, it's a fantasy ship, kind of deep water DSP or whatever the hell that show was called. What was that show called?
This whole Sequest.
Sequest.
DSV.
Yeah, Deep Water DSQ. That's the one.
DSQ. What does that even stand for?
No, it's a Deep Water DSW.
Go
buy shoes.
There you go.
Quality footwear and glass nose.
But other than those two movies, I think I saw some Lost in Space, obviously, some repeats or something, and Tower Inferno and things that are really old things I don't remember very well. But his credits are just enormous. He was around forever, that guy, and lived to be 75, died in 91, and I guess brought us much great entertainment. But I was about asleep during this movie.
I wish you had watched it when you were better rested, because it's a movie that it breaks ground in terms of entertainment. Like, it's a thriller. It's nonstop action. It stops every now and then for some exposition. And the action just breaks in, which was just not something that you saw much of before the last, 30 years of movies.
I guess so. If you're telling me that it established a new kind of...
It didn't establish it.
Okay.
It
perfected the formula, though, because I think Star Trek was this after this. I mean, it was just... I think it just perfected that formula.
Yeah, and we got Star Trek, how many years after this? Would have been
7 years
after this?
Yeah, something like that. And it was very much like that. Like, there were moments where the ship would be hit by something or one of those mines would go off. and they would all shift around on the bridge.
Lunge. Or,
and I thought, oh, that's some Star Trek-y stuff.
Right. It's right all there. Inside. And it's funny how like they'd be shaking and rocking and the tank that had the rubber shark in it would just be, you know, still as glass.
Yeah, that thing would never move. Or the food on the table in the galley would just stay right on the table while they were having just the freak out of their lives. And
yes.
I don't know. There a couple of times I kind of had a weird, for whatever reason, would flash back to the, and I don't even mean the old one, but like the new Battlestar Galactica. I got a vibe out of this. Mm. Isn't that weird? Like kind of a, maybe it's just because.
Trapped in a big vessel.
Yeah, and they're on their own, and they come back, and the rest of the world seems to be on fire when they come up, and
literally.
I got excited about that for a minute because I thought, oh, while they were away, the world was destroyed, and they're the lone survivors. And
they went
through
a time bubble, maybe. Even?
Yeah,
because did you get that too? Because I didn't understand how it was edited because I was watching, and my impression was that they had just. Went under the water, you know, dive, and they were down there for a couple of hours, and then they, you know, they start having the crash, and they come back up, it's 3 days later.
Yeah, and nothing's left, and it's all just, like, mutated human life, and, like, that's what right. I really was hoping for all of that, and I didn't get
more
any
sci-fi.
Of that.
Yeah. It helps this movie.
Instead, I got the weirdest view of the UN General Assembly I've ever seen with a giant, like, turkey bone behind everybody.
That looked like some kind of Klingon shape to me. I was thinking,
oh, yeah.
But see, I think that's such clever effects. By writing the film the way they did, they were able to do a bunch of things on the cheap. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have really horrible looking sets, but then you darkened them and kept, put red light on them so brightly that you couldn't really tell, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when they're coming and going from the top side of the sub, that's a horrible set. Mm-hmm. But they, because the story says that the world is now lit badly... They have, you know, the set lit badly, and you're looking at it going, oh, that's fine. That's a submarine.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. I saw this kind of, when I was younger, I would see these kind of things through my grandparents' eyes, because this was their era for, you know, like, us at our age going to see, you know, whatever, Avengers, is kind of like, this is that for them.
Totally.
They would have been their age.
Cast of the time.
Yeah, for right, sure. Yeah. But here's
Frankie Avalon, too, even.
Right.
Well, here's my question about that whole the cast thing,
right
there. Why is it in movies made in like 61? There are no young leads. Everyone's 1,000 years old as lead actors.
Unless you're a chick,
I guess so. Yeah. If you're your young Barbara Eden, I guess, right. Who's still with us. Everyone else in this movie is freaking dead, but she's still here. I think Frankie Avalon's still here, isn't he?
That's a good question.
Let me text him to see if he's still okay.
Scott, it's a good reminder of how the business changed, the business of making movies.
Yeah, he's still alive.
People got into these lifetime contracts with studios, and they were, you know, they then sort of became an owner of everything that was going on there, and got to walk into, you know, pre-production concepts and say, I'm in this film, and, you know,
I'm Walter Pigeon, and I'm in this film.
Like, it used to be that there was business going on, and nowadays we're really used to this world of free agents. Everyone in, you know, every director, every actor, every editor is a free agent. Right, you know?
Oh, you're right, because it is kind of in reverse of how things were done back then. The studios funded, and they were the one who pushed for a movie and asked for a script and asked for this. And now it's more like, you know, somebody may have a great idea, and then they'll shop it around, then they'll get funding, and then they'll pick up a studio, and then it's kind of a roll from there. Yeah.
In 1961, you're looking at someone like Peter Lorre. And oh, come on, that guy
Hello.
Has no
what
he
are
has
you
no
doing
star power.
He has no star power, my shark friend.
but he's been on contract with this studio for 100 years, and they know very well what he can do. And some new hotshot isn't catching on in 1961. In 2015, you would never cast that guy. You would absolutely be looking for the hotshot because you want to be the movie that made the next big thing that everybody wants to see.
You don't think they'd like submarine movie, 2015 submarine movie, going to the bottom of the ocean, right? And put Christopher Walken in the tank with the shark.
No. The Danny DeVito is a better
they comparison. They did this with the shark tank in that LL Cool J movie. He's the only person I can remember from the movie, though. And there was the sharks. Oh, yeah, that's
Sea.
It. Yeah.
What was it?
Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea. Who was it? Was it Samuel Jackson?
Yeah, Samuel Jackson.
Yeah. He's the one that got eaten in like a half a second. Right. Famous for that scene.
A completely unexpected turn, which was great.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So
this shark coming at you.
If you want to watch two relatively recent films that combined to make this film, if you then de-age them 50 years, combine Deep Blue Sea and Armageddon.
Yeah,
those are the two.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment. Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned Walter Pidgeon. Fine Canadian actor. All these guys, most of them, born in the 1800s. Like, that's what we're talking about here. So they were already, you know, pushing it. Guy died in 84 at the age of 87.
So he was born in 1897.
Yeah, he was born the year that the industry demanded a new PG-13 rating. Think of that. but he's, you know, 1897. Some of these guys born before that, like 1877s. We're talking about, you know, the beginning of the film. I mean, these are those actors who made it through the silent era in some cases and went on to do talkies and stuff. But this is a full color film with, I have to admit, effects that are pretty good for the time.
Like, amazing.
Yeah. I wasn't unimpressed.
61. By the way, we asked about Frankie Avalon. He was, he is still alive.
Yeah.
And his wife, Catherine, was born 2 years after this movie was released.
Oh, my.
Oh, good job.
Wait, really?
He did have a fetish for babies on his knee.
Wow. Wait a minute. That would make her... Oh, I guess... Well, she's like in her 50s now. Then.
Yeah, he's 74, so she was born 1963, so she's like 6 years older than us.
Okay, so so that's weird to think. My mom would have been his age in this film. That's
okay,
weird.
Check this out, Scott. I knew we were going to talk about ages.
Yeah.
So I looked at Robert Sterling, captain of the ship in this movie.
Yeah.
Robert Sterling, the actor.
Yeah.
When they made this movie, he was exactly as old as you are right now.
Oh my gosh.
Now you're watching this movie. Don't you absolutely feel like he's at least 15 years older than you?
Yeah, that's but I feel that way about everything that's why is that though? What is it about an older movie? Because they just looked older then. Everyone smoked 9 packs of cigarettes.
Yeah, because they were smoking like back to back to back.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But you see like a photo, it's like, here we are in 1920. This here is Jim Bob Fillmore, and he was on his way west to get his fortune. He was 22. And I'm like, he looks 65. Like everyone looks older back then. And I don't think
there wasn't as much air conditioning back then. Did that you think maybe that was
Wow, the sweat.
They were pitting out, man.
There was some chesting and backing out.
Yeah.
There was some stunt sweat in this movie. There's no way that was natural sweat.
No, for sure.
They were spray bottle sweat.
That was definitely aftermarket sweat.
But like,
so how do you die? Maybe I didn't understand the science. Maybe I just, my common sense is trying to ride in here. I didn't understand how you could be in the Antarctic on top of ice and suffer heat exhaustion.
The Arctic. Because
the sky was burning.
No, I'm sorry, the Arctic, was it?
No.
It was the Arctic, yes. And the sky, the atmosphere had suddenly heated up tremendously.
Oh, I didn't get that was ice flows and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. Well, when they don't float, when they sink and hit your submarine on the way down, it's hard to think that that's ice.
Like slabs styrofoam.
Ice.
Yeah.
It wasn't. The ice was melting and big, huge rocks that were in the ice were falling into the water.
I see. Oh. It was poorly represented is all I'm getting at. I mean, it's as good as some of the effects were.
There were so many things glossed over in this movie.
Yeah.
I love that. There's a scene early in this movie that is a tour of glossing over things. Mm. We're looking around the ship and the lady says, oh, and how does this work? And he says, well, it's just like an elevator. Thank you. Right. And they just walk on.
they did that. The whole scene where they walk through this is like an elevator. And this is our Radio Shack where we sell the diodes. And
I love that this is our Radio Shack. That was great.
Oh,
that was pretty good. We've got
everything.
Our own personal Radio Shack, and you can get a Sprint phone while you're in here. So
you can get a new BB-8.
Yeah, enjoy yourselves.
Yeah. And when these lights are all green, then it's safe to go down. Ooh, that's going to come up later. Yeah. Nah, not really.
Not really, no. I do love the, like, what depth are we at? And you got to have a giant display of 10 numbers, 1 through 10. Right. Yeah. And what does the 10 represent? Like, what is the quantification of the space that you've traveled for level 8, for example? How far is that down there?
Right.
That stuff was super stupid.
I'm pressing the buttons.
Also, lucky for them, though, when they got all that damage from the mines and the bridge there where all the windows are, they could stop giant holes and leaks by just turning that knob. That's pretty good.
I wrote that down. Yeah. That was so weird because I was thinking, oh, they got a hole breach. Oh, they're really screwed now. And then he just walks over and goes,
yeah, this thing just got loosened. This wheel just got loosened.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That all that stuff, just so much. I guess, okay. Yes, it was late. I felt like there was the ratio of talking to action was pretty high on the talking side for me. Mm-hmm. And I just was drifting and having a terrible time with the dialogue because it was all pretty bad. But when they'd get to like rocking the ship and having stuff happen, it was pretty cool. But you have to all admit, the giant squid was terrible.
It was terrible.
Which one? Yeah. Or was that a giant octopus the second time
or
around?
Or whatever the one with the pink.
Yeah, I think the second one was a giant octopus.
Oh, was it? Well, the one where he shot a harpoon in its eye and it didn't even blink.
The one at the bottom of the sea or the one swimming in the ocean?
Oh, the one at the bottom of the sea that they had, that the guy almost got eaten by.
So that's the first one.
Yeah. Is that the first one? I guess so.
Okay. Where they decide to hack into an undersea cable so they can make a phone call.
To call the president.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love tidbits like that. Yeah. Like, this film is just chock full of what are we going to do now?
Yeah.
Let's do something wacky.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't work. So we have to keep going.
But it's so self-serious though. Like they're not doing this and there's no knowingly thing happening here. It's straight up like, I know what we'll do. We'll tap into the phone line that's beneath the sea. And it's just like serious, expecting people at home to really be into it. By the way, the news guy is Irwin Allen.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Was that
cameo,
him?
Director's cameo.
I knew I was supposed to know, but I was like, what am I supposed to be
saying? Well, it's supposed to be his trademark. Like in all his movies, if there is a news guy going, this just in, and talking about movie and creating plot, it's him doing it all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you feel like nobody ever is going to do it as well as Alfred Hitchcock?
Probably not.
Like, you know, basically having a cameo thing you do, it's like, Hitchcock did it first, and he did it better.
Well, that's the thing. He did it first, though. Everyone does it. Stan Lee does it. M. Night Shyamalan does it. But because Hitchcock did it first, we just don't really give them any credit.
Well, if Stan Lee was the director, I'd say Stan Lee did it better. Because his appearances were always hilarious. Whereas, you know, it's almost like a Where's Waldo thing with Hitchcock. It's like, he's over there in that window talking to that guy about that painting. Or he's walking that dog, or he's getting off the bus.
I like that. Stan
Lee is like, hey, don't miss me. I'm standing right here in front of you, you silly person.
In Big Hero 6, Stan Lee turns out to be a guy's dad in a painting on the wall.
Yeah.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. Who is he? I've already forgotten. I just saw last week, but I finally saw Ant-Man, and I don't remember who he was in that. He was it was kind of a prominent cameo. And don't remember now. He was like hello. Like you're right up in the camera.
Yes, right.
Shite. That's how memorable that
I haven't
scene
seen
was.
Ant-Man. Right. I think it's might be too small for me.
That movie's
it's a great movie.
It is a great movie, by the way.
That's good.
I liked it a lot. All right, so
I put it up there with maybe not up there with Guardians of the Galaxy, but in that vein of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I would say yes. They took the thing that should be super hard to make and made it totally work. Basically, what they made is a heist movie. That's why it works. It's a heist movie. I'm telling you. Let me tell you something real quick. There's like a little theory I got going. I was telling my kids this the other day.
He was a bartender, by the way, Stan Lee.
That's right.
In one of those scenes where...
it was like a montage.
Right, where Paul Rudd's buddy is telling the story of how he found out about this other thing that was taking place and this other guy he knows. Mm-hmm. And he was the bartender who...
It was basically an Ocean's 11 scene is what it was. It reminded me of that.
It was. Yes, right. Exactly.
So, and which I think is why it works. So this is my theory about Marvel movies right now. The ones that work the best are the ones that are the most like a genre film. And I mean, like, that one's a great heist movie. Winter Soldier is a 70s spy thriller. I'm trying to think
who's
of another
in the,
one.
Who's in the ice?
Thor. Yeah, well.
Making themselves a drink.
Topping off that Jack Daniels.
Somebody just opened the globe sitting behind their desk, picked up their little metal tongs to make themselves a highball.
I think that person might be Randy. Anyway,
I think it could be.
Then you got your fantasy movies with the Thor movies. Like, you can kind of categorize them all, right? Ensemble Avengers things, but those are a little bit more general. But I think their most successful attempts. Oh, and Guardians is a Western, basically.
Right.
In a lot of ways, Avengers is a Western. Like, they take these different tropey sort of genre-based things, stories we've been telling each other for eons.
Right.
And then they apply superheroes to them, and they work better than the ones where they don't do that.
It's so great. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I think it's super smart.
You know, a thriller, political thriller with the Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm. And they really hammered that home with this one, I felt like. Like, this was such a heist movie. This is the one that made it obvious to me, where I finally went, ding! Oh, I see what you're up to, Marvel. I see what you're doing to us.
Can't wait for their Hulk Black Widow rom-com.
Oh, that'd be great. Right. That'd
we
be great.
We like it, though.
Sad
like,
Hulk.
Like, the audience reacts best when there is a main character who breaks the mold, like Iron Man or Star-Lord, or apparently in this case, you know, Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. When that character breaks out of the confines of that thing you're talking about, that's when we love them. And when that doesn't happen, like Age of Ultron, everybody loved the first night. But then a few days passed and everyone was like, I don't know, I could take it or leave it. Yeah. Well, there's no main character in the movie. There's so many characters, there may as well not even be any main character.
Yeah, that thing is directionless, and the rumor is currently internally they consider the film a failure, even though it made billions of dollars worldwide. But I think that creatively there's big issues with it. I place that at the feet probably of too much all at once, too much expectation, too much to hit the mark again, because the first one was so good, and they just freaking
now
petered
in 1961 out. You didn't do this.
No, you did not.
You didn't establish a character who made everybody else look normal.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, because as a result, watching this film in 2015, the whole time I'm like, let the freaking Admiral go nuts. Like, I want him to really genuinely go crazy, and then this is going to be a good movie. But no, he kind of held it together.
Oh, you know what, though? That's the other thing that's reminding me of. There's parts of this movie that remind me of Crimson Tide. You guys remember Crimson Tide?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
is totally. Is it because they both have a sub in them, Scott?
Maybe, but also because Gene Hackman kind of went nuts a little bit, and the other guy had to kind of step up. Denzel Washington had to step up and kind of take better command because he didn't trust him, and so they put him under house arrest with his dog
I'm
and all that.
I'm assuming command of this vessel.
Yeah, that was great. I love that movie.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Yeah, that's your Bruckheimer right there, man.
Was there Crazy Ivans in that one, or just in Hunt for Red October?
Just Hunt for Red October, but this one did have Lord of the Rings man. What's his name? I can't think of his name. The actor. He's in all sorts of things. The Road. Hidalgo. What's the guy's name?
Viggo Mortensen.
Viggo
no,
Mortensen.
Don't tell him.
Sorry. He's in. We were seeing how long it could go.
Yeah.
He's in the. He's the missile.
I couldn't do it anymore.
couldn't stand suffering. It. He couldn't stand it. He's in the missile room.
Launcher.
Yeah. He's great. It's like the first time I ever saw him do anything. Anyway, that movie's great. If you haven't seen Crimson Tide, I like it better than most of those Bruckheimer-like Tony Scott movies. It's a Tony Scott movie as well, which is good to mention.
The person who could have really made this about him was the character played by Michael Ansara, the Miguel, the guy they find barely alive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like the outsider who has something to say about all this stupidity.
Miguel Alvarez, yeah.
That character, it should have been a movie that got taken over by that character, because it's so interesting. He's the only swarthy person aboard. He's the only, like, raving liberal. You know what I mean? Like, all this stuff.
It's a mystery.
He's a mystery.
Out of time, too. His facial hair is completely, like, modern and current for us.
Oh, yeah.
It was weird. That was really weird. But also, Randy made a good point. He was like the he was the counterculture in this. Like, he was the everyone else is the straight-laced sort of conservative model, whatever. And he is this crazed out hippie dude that's just starting to come on the scene in real life and in real culture. And he's a little foreign. He's got some kind of brown skin, you know.
He's a little French, and he has a puppy.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound hard to accomplish, but I'm telling you, if this movie had been just made by Quentin Tarantino, that Michael Ansara character would have gotten the best lines in the film.
Yeah.
He would have sat and waxed prophetic on every little thing they're doing and argued with everybody and so on.
Yeah. But they didn't let him. They just made him come at the very end with a tiny little pineapple bomb or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah.
Free lunatic.
Yeah, lunatic. He's sticking. He's fighting the man, and he's sure that. Well, actually, he was kind of at the end. He turned out to be kind of a religious fanatic. Like that was the whole thing.
Yeah.
God meant this planet to be on fire, and we can't stop it.
He represented doubt.
A week later, by the way, after this film finished and wrapped, 1 week after filming finished, Barbara Eden, who was in this, future My Dream of Jeannie, yeah, and that guy, Miguel Ansara, who played Miguel Alvarez, or Michael Ansari, sorry, they got married. They got hitched.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if they met here. It doesn't say. But
then, he couldn't take any more of that booty shaking. He had to put a ring on it.
They then proceeded to do one shots on every television series ever made.
True.
Yeah. They Love Boat, Fantasy Island. The dude was on Murder, She Wrote, Mike Hammer, every one of the Star Treks. This guy's a Star Trek connection. He was on all of them.
Wow. Yeah. Just died 2 years ago at 91. Yeah. Lived a nice long life.
Beautiful life.
He was also in an early Star Trek episode. He played Commander Kang.
He made a really short cameo appearance at his own funeral.
Aww. Take that, Michael Ansara. You're 91. You lived long enough.
I just made fun of a dead person.
Some interesting stuff. Walter Pidgeon, who played Admiral Nelson in this movie, and Richard Basehart, who played Admiral Nelson in the TV series, which came out in 1964, both died within a week of each other. That's always fun when those sort of things happen. That's happened before in the show. We've talked about like some weird, like close deaths or something of characters. Right. Some of the sub's equipment and sound effects were recycled from The Fly from 1958. A common thing back then, you were like, well, we've got this. Go ahead and use it.
Yeah.
And then,
help me. I remember that. That was in there.
That was in there, yeah. Help me. Yeah. We're dying in a glass-nosed, stupid submarine. When the bomb is released, it results in the sound that the Batmobile makes when it powers up. Somebody threw that in there. So.
I thought, yeah, during that scene, it sounded like the Batmobile, and I caught a little bit of lasers from Star Wars used later on, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All that stuff was in there.
Some of that stuff felt like it was a little recycled from somewhere. Do you ever have that, though? Like, I'm playing this video game. It's a stupid mobile game. And the sound they have for when you die is a combination of the Wilhelm scream and the sound that guards make when they discover you in a Metal Gear Solid game. Exclamation point over their head. And it's so blatant to me that I cannot believe they got away with using it. Like, it's just in there. And I think they thought if they mixed the two together that somehow neither side
just
would
sampling.
Know.
It was sampling.
Oh, yeah, awesome. Sampling. What's the... P. Diddy did it. Why can't I? That's what he's saying.
A sample.
All right. What else we got? Oh! You know, there's nothing I like more, guys, when I'm really sweaty. I've been out on the burning surface of the earth, and nothing I like better than walking into a very small enclosed space and lighting up a big fat cigar.
Right, and then sucking it like it's a, you know, I mean, just really sucking it.
Think of its time. I mean, I'm surprised there wasn't more drinking going on, more smoking generally happening in this thing. But there was a guy in a pipe. He had Doctor Hoo-ha in there with a pipe, and
so country doctor. I mean,
we need a new sci-fi channel show called Doctor Hoo Ha.
I'd watch it. I would watch that in a heartbeat.
Oh, hey, sorry.
Some lady parts.
Oh, we didn't even mention Mayberry guy in this. Floyd the barber.
Congressman. Also, our chicken
of
the bucket.
Oh no way! Of course he was. Yeah, right. A chicken the bucket, Brent Dunaway. You're totally right.
Holy crap! Yeah. I did not make that connection.
Yeah. I'm assuming he jumped off when they got to the UN. But they never really talked about it.
No, they said.
So
they go into the UN to do this thing, right? And the whole place erupts and tries to lynch them on the spot.
Yeah.
And in the elevator, the lady says, well, what about the congressman? Right. And the admiral says, well, he's just going to have to leave him. He's going to have to stay here.
That wasn't a chicken in the bucket. You're right.
He's not going to make it back to the boat with us.
Yeah. He's not making it. He's going to have to go change his identity and head down to Mayberry.
He dies. So he dies. Literally, the actor died like 2 years after this. This is right around the time he left this mortal coil. I just felt like everybody in this movie was like an inch from death, even though that's not true. Many lived, you know, another 30, 40 years. But it just, I don't know why. It's like watching my grandparents act. Like, it's just their generation. It's their slicked back hair. It's that goop they put in their hair all the time. The men, especially the admiral, he's like all the people my grandparents hung out with. His pants are just a little too high, you know.
A little.
He had a good run in World War II, came back, didn't talk about it much. You know, like, it's that whole thing. It's that whole whatever. I don't even know what to call it. It's a very specific generation.
Yeah.
And it's
the greatest.
Right? Well,
the greatest.
Sure. Yes. According to
Tom Brokaw, the greatest generation.
But yeah, it's fine, and I'm not making fun of it. It's just I don't know why it's so distinct for me. I feel like it's almost like I see that guy on camera, and I can almost taste the hard candy my grandma would give me.
Right.
Like there's just something about that very specific era, the way the furniture is shaped, the horrible green color they use on things.
Right, the orange leather pleather padding on the chairs in the glass dome room.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Everything smells like tobacco.
And I think
there should be
finally
plastic coating on the furniture.
Yeah, there totally should. And I feel like I'm getting back to the point. Like, the shower has little flower-shaped sticky things that make it so you don't slip. You guys know what I'm talking about. Like, there's a whole motif.
Not only do I know what you're talking about, I'm going to enjoy one later.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? And then there's probably an organ in the corner of some living room, and it's not. It's a small little organ, and the organ, and they have these big white flippy switches to turn things on for different effects, and
every single one of the male cast in this movie, when they go to the bathroom, there's a cup with some Pepsodent in it.
Yes! Right. Pepsodent. Oh, my gosh.
And you'd walk in there and be like, what's that pinkish stuff over there? And then one day you'd go in the bathroom in the middle of the night, and there was teeth in there.
Yeah. In there. Like, what the hell is that? Who doesn't have their teeth in?
Oh, dear Jesus.
And then you go to the kitchen, and the fridge is olive green, and you open it up, and the handles are metal and thin. And they kind of snap out, and you pull. Ah, see, look, it's
and
not even.
A voice from the other room says, "Shut that door."
That's where I keep my happy pills, or whatever. You know, I realize that it's a motif that just as a kid, it's overwhelming. Is all I'm saying. And when I go to my grandparents' house, it would wash over me in a way that never quite left, and I kind of hated it then. But now I have a weird nostalgia for it, and I didn't even exist during that time. I wasn't even born. So
we call that the Nico Wafers conundrum.
I guess so.
Love Nico Wafers, though. That's
really?
Yeah, they're totally disgusting. But
I like
them
for writing on chalkboards.
Yeah, I can't stop eating them for some reason.
Those aren't good. And they give you those Chiclet gum things. Like, oh my gosh, I could just. There's so many.
Yeah.
So many of those things. Pepsodent just about put me over the edge there, Randy. Holy crap. What else? There's the other thing I was going to say about this movie. I have a lot of notes here about how tired I was, so I'm going to skip all those. But I have one here that says, I never really got what the hell was going on. I kind of still feel that way. Like, I still really don't know.
It's funny that you say that, because the movie goes to great lengths to repeatedly tell you precisely what's going on. It's a plot that can be described in like 7 words, and they use those 7 words over and over and over.
I guess I was looking for more and didn't find it.
I think a lot of it was because they spoke what happened. This is one of the reasons why I forgot that Floyd the Barber got left behind, because they speak a lot of what is going on in the background instead of actually showing you. Whereas, you know, nowadays we mostly show. It's like, look, here, here, here. Mm-hmm. And here it was more like, we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, and it's also very stationary, these cameras.
Right.
There's not a lot of sort of follow cams and shaky cam.
There's only
like
one pullback that I even remember.
Yeah, and even when the galley's moving around, the camera's not doing much of the work. It's like they were afraid.
It's all the people just throwing themselves. Yeah, to one side.
It's such a strange, to me, it's like a style that just doesn't exist anymore. Nobody has a camera placed somewhere permanently that just sits and films a thing. And I think as we got further and further away from film just needs to be another version of a stage show just on camera, and got to, hey, we can be creative with this medium and create emotion and movement and whatever with the camera itself. This was an example of that still being the case. And I think maybe I'm just kind of averse to that. I just watch and just go, what happened? Oh.
Well, another thing.
I bet you don't even remember the other square octopus because you were asleep.
I don't really remember. Right. I actually kind of don't remember the other octopus.
That was very. It was very quick. Well, you remember them charging up the ship hull. You remember that part?
I do remember that.
Electrifying the ship hull to get the thing off.
Yeah, I remember that part. That seemed all right. And that was to get it off. That was the one you're talking about.
That's the one I'm talking
about. Okay, I guess I remember it then. Okay, it was never clear to me what the hell was out there. Like, I just, and then when I'm like, okay, what are they doing now? Barbara Eden, who I did not know that's who that was. She was I guess she's super young in this.
Yeah,
right. You didn't realize it was Barbara Eden?
No, I couldn't tell at first.
Wow.
running around. I thought
I don't feel bad about not recognizing Floyd the Barber, because I did recognize Barber.
Did you recognize Floyd the Barber?
No.
Yeah, that's the big giveaway.
So your submarine has a big glass nose, Andy.
I would have loved to have had a full conversation between him and Lore. That would have been getting together. That would have been.
Well, and I'm with Scott on this one thing, and that is the movie is just chock full of character introductions, and this person is doing this, and this person's name is this, and he comes from there. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't do that unless those characters are going to actually become meaningful at some point in the film. All you've done is just waste my time and fill my brain with useless information.
It's like it's 12 chicks in a bucket. They're just all there. They've been introduced. You kind of
know
who
they
are.
It's like a whole KFC family size chicks in a bucket, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's the kind of hard-nosed sergeant-y guy that's in the hull of the ship who's always ordering men around and keeping them straight and saying, get back to work and all that. Well, and I kind of thought that would be an interesting plot point, but that
he died.
Yeah, he did. So I guess that's the little young
dude that he was always ordering around.
That's true. And they went together, right?
They went together. Yeah. The way they lived.
Hand in hand.
They died the way they lived.
And it's funny because you can...
In a submarine?
That stuff was broadcast early. Like when they were having a conflict, you're like, no, later they'll,
they'll patch things up. They'll be best buds.
They'll be making out in the bunk somewhere. when I wrote... This is how tired I was. I wrote a note that says, Peter Lorre is weird looking.
He is weird looking. Yeah. His eyes are like on the side of his head, like a hammerhead shark.
Right. And that's the reason why they loved him. True story. That's the reason why they loved him in Bugs Bunny. He was such a, it was so easy to animate and illustrate such a odd looking character.
So in our time, do we have an equivalent? Our equivalent is? It's like Family Guy making fun of some celebrity or South Park doing something with, that's the equivalent of that, right?
So our equivalent to the Bugs Bunny thing. I thought you meant our equivalent to Peter Lorre.
Well, to Peter Lorre being, or any of those like,
Marty Feldman.
You dirty rat.
That era.
They put those people in there, and then they would make fun of them with Bugs Bunny and Donald Duck or whatever. Daffy Duck.
Duck.
I'm mixing my ducks. Got to get my ducks,
your ducks in a row.
Yeah. But then you jump to today, and I always, as a kid, I was thinking, well, they don't do this anymore. We don't take our current day celebrities and insert them into our kids' animation. Now I understand.
I just don't think there was at such an adult level. Bugs Bunny was an adult cartoon.
It was then, right? But as a kid, I didn't realize that.
You need to compare Bugs Bunny to Family Guy. Then they're doing the same thing.
And now it all makes sense, because I'm guessing like an 8-year-old kid during the heyday of Chuck Jones cartoons of Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner. He didn't, 8-year-old kids don't know who this Edward G. Robinson guy is, or who this other, these famous people are, or a freaking Bing Crosby always got used. You notice that? He would always come out and go, blah, 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 blah.
Yes, right.
That was always
happening. Cary Grant was always a frequent one.
He'd come out and go, listen here. Oh my gosh, I'm just feeling nostalgic for all this old shit my grandparents were into. Like, I want to watch it all now. I don't know why. Despite how bored I was with this. Anyway, any other thoughts other than Peter Lorre's weird looking?
It was titles were really important. That's how I opened up with the Doctor, Captain, Admiral. I mean, it was such niceties. You just don't see that.
You don't see that at all anymore.
You don't see that anymore.
I mean, you sometimes see, sir, yes, sir, but it's usually...
Right. I also love the generalized psychological treatment of anybody who is having a shit fit because of stressful times, calling it nervous hysteria. That was always one classification.
That's what they back then, like my grandma, she wouldn't have manic depression or, she wouldn't have whatever. They would be episodes.
Yeah. Right.
Oh,
and then they would be all laid out because there was having an episode of nervous hysteria. No, they're not. They're just, what did you drug them with?
Yeah. I kind of, were we talking about this on TMS? I missed the day. Yeah, we were talking with Wendy about this.
Mm-hmm.
Back in like the 1800s or whatever, everything had a name like a rheumatoid phlebitis. You'd say things like, I've got the old skizzer kicks and I don't know how to get rid of it. But really what you had was like heart cancer. You just didn't have a name for it or didn't know what the proper diagnosis was. But there's something about that old-timey classification.
Diagnosis of drugs.
And people go, you heard about Farmer Bill, did you? He died yesterday of the chronic flim-flam. And you're like, oh, shit. And there's something about that I really like because it simplifies things. Now there's just like, it could be lupus, could be, there's all this science. There's all this science now. Right. I think it makes people more paranoid now because back then it was just under the weather.
You accepted death, it seems like, at a, I don't know, maybe at a better level. You're just accepting.
Come for us all.
Yeah. Like the guy in the galley goes, so what's, when are we getting out of here, Captain? I've just had a baby girl who's joined the family. And I'm like, what?
Who talks like this? Nobody and everybody does. Was obsessed. I mean, there was at least three mentions of bouncing kids on your knees. I don't know if that was a obsession for people during the early 60s, but
I think it's the war generation trying to put that horror behind them, trying to establish a sense of order in their lives, and as a macro level, everybody kind of going along with it, which brought about their children rebelling like crazy.
And incredibly ignorant about how the universe works.
Absolutely, yeah.
So just putting names on everything and not really having an idea of what that thing is.
I mean, it's just more nuanced than saying they're the greatest generation. Well, maybe they were the greatest war generation. They were maybe some of the bravest people, the most voluntary people, maybe. But they're also one of the most racist generation. They were also one of the most...
But they don't want to take that moniker on. No.
No. They hated, you know, they're the ones
they'll
that grew
say
up...
that about us, too. The most money-focused generation, the most fame whore generation.
Yeah, fame whore. That's exactly what we're going to be.
Dude, fame whore, that is happening. I guarantee it. Yeah. The way we are like narcissistic generation. We're basically Roman. We're Roman times now with the celebrity business. I'm telling you, it's the shittiest state we've ever been in.
The real generation of Beverly Hills. The real.
I'd watch now. Finally, one of those shows I'd actually watch. All right. This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper. We're excited to have them on the show. They are an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Don't go to any more warehouses or showrooms and lay on beds where some gross guy was there before and you didn't even know it. Eliminate that from your life. Their mattresses are obsessively engineered at a very fair price. You can try one easily. Buy it online, completely risk-free. You get 100 days. That's 100 days to try that mattress out. I did this. I liked it so much, I kept it. Get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin, $950 for a king-size mattress. If you compare that to industry averages, that's extremely inexpensive. You can save an additional $50 as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/filmsack and then enter the code filmsack. That's casper.com/filmsack and the code filmsack for $50 off. Thanks, Casper. All right, let's do some clips. We got clips. I bring them and we play them.
The clips.
There's some pretty good ones.
I hope you have some music from the beginning because I do want to talk about how much Michael Bublé sounds like Frankie Avalon.
Oh my gosh.
Right. It was nice.
Frankie Avalon sang that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he sang it. It was in the credits, in the opening. And also, he was one of the actors. Who was he?
He was like one of the kids in the.
He was the one who got slapped. He was the one, right?
He was playing the trumpet because he was super short.
Oh, yeah. He got called a pipsqueak and got slapped, right?
Yes.
I have that clip as well. All right, well, here's him singing the title of the film in the beginning of the film. So here you go. It's short, but here you go.
On a voyage to the bottom of the sea.
That's so stupid.
But it's
tone deaf, though. It doesn't match what this movie's about, though.
Exactly. Isn't that fun, though? Because it's such a juxtaposition to what we're about to watch, which I assume was going to be kind of an action horror kind of flick, sci-fi thing kind of going on. And to have this very crooner-esque kind of thing over here, it was, to me, it felt
So you like that. Modern. Okay, so a game like BioShock, right? You're fighting away and you walk in a room and you're hearing some old timey thing going, listen, baby, I think you're the greatest. But around you is like bloody bodies and ammo to pick up. And it's this dystopic, awful future. But yet there's this weird contrast happening of some happy 40s tune or whatever. Do you feel like that's what you're getting out of it? Because
that's what I got out of it.
For me, it's just not. I don't think they were being that subtle. I think they were just like, we need to have a theme song. Old people are into what this is, so let's just do this. I don't think it was intentional. Maybe that's how it came off, but I don't think that was intentional. They're too careful back then. Like, everything's just too careful.
I'm curious. I had to go back and see what the theme music to The Towering Inferno was, because I know that there was a love song that came out of that.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, it was Poseidon Adventure that had, there's got to be a morning after. Right.
So I think Irwin just... Irwin doesn't have a friend. I think he just likes doing that.
He likes the little love songy, right?
Towering Inferno song. All right, let's just see if we find something we can play here.
Oh, was We May Never Love Like This Again,
oh, yeah,
wasn't
here it?
It
is. Here
yes.
It is. This is some of the time.
We may never love like this again.
Wow. Downtown.
Yeah. And that was like, that was 10 years after this one too, so.
Yeah, but I didn't realize that, I didn't know Paul Newman was in that. That's a bigger cast than I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, yeah.
Isn't also O.J. Simpson's in that, I think.
Another casty good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to see... Lost World, the Irwin Allen Lost World, because he made that a year before this one, and
big stop motion dinosaurs.
I'm sure it's
but
it's
Scott
fantastic.
May never wake up if we do that.
No, that one's got that's got big rubber dinosaurs. I'm in.
No, that's got iguanas with big rubber prosthetics on it.
Oh, even better, dude. So they do close ups of that, and then they try to make them look like they're on the beach. Oh, I'm all in on that. That sounds great.
Yeah.
In fact, every title to every movie he's made sounds great. They may be boring, I don't know, but they all sound like great titles. All right, here is, this was annoying, this right here.
Diving stations!
That's just the worst. When I need to wake my son up for school Monday, I'm going to pull it up to his head and go, I'm going to play it right in his head.
It's annoying, but addictive.
Is it?
I kept walking around doing that afterwards.
Still annoying. Let me try it again. No, still hate
diving
it.
Diving stations!
You found some weird addictions, man. That's a weird thing to be addicted to. All right, here's some sweet advice, all right? So some good advice.
The wild dreams of today are the practical realities of tomorrow.
Ah, the wild dreams of today.
Thanks, Popular Science Magazine article writer.
Yeah, in 1961.
Right.
Okay, here's your barber from Mayberry. So Brian, here you go.
You have an expensive toy here, Admiral. Though it is suitable for sightseeing.
Yeah, Andy.
How did I not pick up on that being Floyd?
I don't know. That's weird.
God.
It's like me and the square squid.
Right.
Or octopus or whatever. We see what we...
Andy.
Hello, Andy. He was creepy, now that you think about it.
He was, right?
He was there. Come here and bounce on my knee, Whoopi.
It's a little weird.
Go home and take photos of little children, Andy, as soon as I'm done with your haircut.
Poor Floyd. All right, here's that creepy Igor guy from old movies. It's like Peter Lorre, but I wrote it down that way, so there you go.
May I explain?
I wish you would.
My little friend Bessie here, we have to drug her in order to do some tests. Now I'm trying to force her water through her gills. So she doesn't drown.
Yeah, that's not creepy.
I am trying to do the work of Miss Frankenstein, who wants me to push this cart down the hall.
Okay. You're right.
He's like a slow-talking Vincent Price.
Yeah.
I thought he had a very similar tone. Cadence,
What? Let's just say there's a comparison here. We're talking about how you put... It's a weird casting. He's so typecast as kind of the creepy horror noir guy, right?
Yeah.
And then you put him in this. That is like Vincent Price in The Ten Commandments. Or...
Right. Edward Scissorhands.
At least that kind of worked. But like in Ten Commandments, it just doesn't fit. It's like, I'm an Egyptian guy in charge of things. See? I mean, that's not how he talked. But you know what I mean? Like, it's weird to put that guy in there. All right, here's Ibbot added a... I got a little Ibbot clip here.
Oh, good.
You did an educational film in the 80s about condom use. And fantastic stuff. Here was, I think, the best piece of advice I got from that film. So here you go.
We just slapped this dude on by hand and away she goes.
There you go. That's, slap that dude
on the
and...
front of the glass nose? Is that what you do with that?
Yeah. Nice reference. All right. We don't talk like this anymore. This is something else. Here's this.
Well, Admiral, I suppose she's your dancing dietitian.
It's Floyd again.
Floyd again, yeah.
Somebody, there
if
is
only
somebody.
She was 10 years younger here.
Like, there is someone who talks like... Can you play the clip again?
Yeah, here it is. One more time. Whoops. Hold on.
Well, Admiral, I suppose she's your dancing dietitian.
The guy from Total Recall.
Schwarzenegger? What?
No, the
not Ronnie Cox.
No.
Not Michael Ironsides.
What's his name?
Three boob woman.
Several things.
The new
Johnny
recall
Cab.
Or the original recall?
The original one.
Brian Emmett. The new one doesn't even exist.
Come on.
I can't think of who you mean. Here, I'll play it again.
Well, Admiral, I suppose she's your dancing dietitian.
No, you're not talking about... You are talking about Total Recall.
Guy, the fat guy who appears in his dream, or he thinks appears in his dream.
And tells him... He's the one that he says, yeah, and he gets shot
in the head.
Yeah,
he sweats. He gets shot because he's sweating.
You are dead on.
The guy who runs Recall.
Yeah, you're right.
And he's in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. Nice call there, dude. That's a good one.
I can't find his name.
Now I'm going to hear it when I play it again.
Well, Admiral, I suppose she's your dancing dietitian.
Yeah, it's totally.
Yeah, it is.
Especially the dietitian pronunciation. All right, you don't hear this anymore.
It all seems very gay and happy, and I am here to observe.
Now, hold on. I thought happy meant gay.
That's what I thought too.
So when she says happy and gay, what are we talking about?
Well, the original line was, it all seems so very gay, which means happy. And
part of their explaining thing, right?
It was okay.
Why would you speak in synonyms? It's all so very indigo and navy blue. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you do that?
That got to give some credit to that actress. She lived to be 89 or something.
Good job. Way to live.
She looked great at her old age. Like one of these just very no work done, but just she's kind of before all that. But she just looked wonderful, like a wonderful old stout grandmother.
Right. We wedge in our talk about how women were treated in 61 in movies.
Not great. Just,
oh, no.
Not good.
No, they said things like this.
But they were the greatest generation.
Here's a man laying down the law.
I'm sorry, but until I say so, the matter's closed.
Sorry, lady. I'm the man in the relationship.
Exactly. We all know I outrank you because I have a penis.
Yeah. Greatest generation at lobbing grenades at Nazis, but everything else, you know, there's some problems. My grandparents were a little... I had a grandfather who hated Jews, and he still called Japanese people Japs. Right. I mean, it's just hard to get away from it, right? Like, that was their time. I don't necessarily blame them, but we all probably should. It's like Reagan, right? It's like people with Reagan, they just worship Reagan. I kind of liked Reagan. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a cool president, whatever. But it's a little rose-colored glasses at this point. Or rose-gold-colored, sorry. Gotta get the new vernacular down. Right. All right. Thanks for clearing this up, where satellites go.
Here now, our television satellite camera in outer space, showing the frightening ring of fire encircling the Earth.
Yeah, is that where they are? Is it in space?
Ring of fire.
Is that where we put satellites?
And that was Irwin Allen, right?
Yeah, that was him too, yeah. And he's got that great accent. I don't even know what that accent is. It's, hear that bit again. Here, hold on.
Here now, our television satellite camera in outer space.
Outer space?
Outer space.
What is that? That's a...
No.
That's Columbus, right? Ohio.
Yeah,
that's
kind of Ohio, yeah.
Yeah.
Or back then, anyway. I don't think it's so much that we know. All right. I don't know what this is. Oh, okay. Well, here's this.
No, no, no! I am diametrically opposed.
I like that guy.
I am diametrically opposed.
Well, what was his name?
Zeus.
What was he supposed to be? Like a competing... He's like Wormstrom.
Right, he's the French scientist.
Okay.
He's, until Admiral gets there, he's the leading scientist in the world. They're not specifying what his field is. He's just the leading scientist in the world.
Smart people.
Right. And I love that scene. I want a whole movie
about
all these people in this room and what they brought to the table and how they're proceeding.
Mm-hmm. And then I love it when Peter Lorre talks to him for a second or answers a question, then immediately turns in full voice with everyone hearing, says, "That man drives me crazy."
I'm right here. They purport that Peter Lorre's character is the second most brilliant scientist on the on the face of the earth.
Right. And that's Henry. Henry Daniell was the guy who played that character, and we've seen him some of that stuff too.
Yeah,
did you guys ever watch The Philadelphia Story?
Yeah, oh yeah, we did together, didn't we? Wait,
not for this movie. Not Philadelphia with Tom.
Not Philadelphia Experiment.
Hanks. Right.
Oh.
Or Experiment. No, the old movie from 1940 with Hepburn. And,
oh, Hitler's in it. Oh, it's Stewart. About. You mean it's about the making of the bomb and all that. Is that what it is? Yeah. Listen to you getting excited. Like the trash can man over there.
No.
I was going to say something about him, and I forgot. Oh, shit. It was important. No, it wasn't. None of this is important. I don't remember. Dang it. It was something about... Oh, I know what it was. I immediately got a Farnsworth Wormstrom vibe
exactly.
off that scene, okay. like from Futurama. That just this that right. exact kind of adversarial scientist kind of thing is is awesome. All right, here is the worst newsman of all time.
Other reports indicate that steaming water from the melting North and South Poles are being sucked into the air currents, spreading weird, freakish fog banks throughout the world.
Weird, freakish.
What a
freakish, weird fog bank that is.
Weird, freakish fog banks.
Yeah, it's just such a dumb thing to say.
It's a wicked... right.
So stupid. All right. Here's some fun with sabotage.
Yes. Oh, I'm glad you got this.
Yeah, this is pretty good. So here you go.
But of deliberate sabotage. Any comments? Sabotage might be just the beginning.
Sabotage.
I'm going to subtly correct your pronunciation of sabotage while I respond to you.
That's basically what he did. But listen to that again.
Sabotage.
All right. Here's a terrible scream.
You know, you could have said something that would have better prepared me to move my headphones back. Like, here is a scream that's going to ruin your day.
Yeah, it's
something.
Pretty bad. Pretty sure my dog's yowling in the backyard right now, just hearing it from my headphones. But they like that lady screaming. This is the time for that. In fact, I got a little more for you. Here you go. It's a shorter one.
Scott?
Yeah. Oh,
more
warning?
I just asked you
to
better prepare me.
Oh. All right, here's a guy giving dialogue. Oh, sorry. Lies. There's a scream again.
Well, he
kind
of prepared
you. I don't trust you anymore.
I have shattered that delicate bond of friendship that needs to be truthful. Yeah, I get it. All right. How about this one? This is not screaming. This is some yelling at Frankie Avalon. So here you go.
Why, you gold-bricking pipsqueak.
Can someone tell me what gold bricking means?
I don't know, but I don't know what it meant back in 61.
What does it mean
now?
Me
to give you, I don't even know what it means now. I just don't think it probably means the same thing.
I don't think we
want to
look up the Urban Dictionary for this one, though.
Right. I'm pretty sure I've heard this. Okay. Say, Jared or present particular gold bricking, instant excuses to avoid a task.
Oh, here it is. He was gold bricking. He wasn't, even the example on Google says he was gold bricking. He wasn't really sick is the quote they use, which is funny because that's right from that movie. I've never heard that before. Gold bricking.
Yeah, gold bricker.
But what's the or like? Where would that? Why would you call it that? Okay, here we go.
Because gold bricking was.
There's also something called cyber slacking that you use today, or cyber loafing. It's right.
So it's continued on today to be right, like playing around the internet instead of doing your work.
Yeah.
It's a worthless brick that appears to be of gold. In other words, you look like you're of value, but you're not.
I get it. Oh. Okay. All right. Look, we've learned a little something today.
Gold bricker.
You pipsqueak?
I'm going to do a song with Jamie Foxx.
Pipsqueak is also a great term. I'd like to find the origin of pipsqueak.
Yeah.
Because what the hell is a pip and why does it squeak? That's pretty great. Pipsqueak. All right. And then...
The backup singer that they let go from the Gladys Knight group. So squeaking.
Squeak, you're out of the pips. See ya.
That's right, exactly.
Here is my favorite line in the film. Here you go.
Lieutenant, get away from the missile button.
Get away from the missile button.
Missile button.
The missile button. Which button? The missile button. terrible.
The one clearly marked as missile. Wait, we don't have any labels on this. It's just buttons.
All the buttons in the movie were fantastic. They were great. Yeah. Big, fat, red buttons.
Oh, yeah. So well labeled, too.
Yeah, you got to freaking love that.
Right.
Simplified. Ladies.
Yeah.
This is my number 10 button.
There are only four. Time for that famous film sack checklist. People flopping around the galley while food stays stationary. Check.
Check.
Whole thing gets solved in the last 45 seconds. Check. And can't believe this got made into a TV series. Check. All right. Moving on to Trek stuff. Oh, we have some Trek connections, as you might expect. Some original series business here. Robert Easton, who played Sparks, he played the Klingon judge in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Oh, yeah.
He's an older actor. Paul Stader was a stunt actor in the... he was also a slave in the TOS episode Bread and Circuses.
Mm.
And then finally...
Stunt actor.
I hate that term.
That's a weird word, stunt.
Stunt man.
I don't like to say stunt. Stunt.
Michael Ansara, who played Miguel Alvarez, played Kang in the TOS episode Day of the Dove and DS9 episode Blood Oath and Voyager episode Flashback. He played that character in all three of those.
He was very sweaty in those as well.
I guess so. He also played Luxwana Troy's Tavanian husband, Jael.
Oh, dude, that episode,
The Muse. Yeah, you remember that? I remember that.
Yes, that's an amazing episode. I love that one.
Yeah. So that guy got around, that Michael Ansari Alvarez man, and he's dead now. What else? Soundtrack, I give it an S for shit. I thought it was terrible. I didn't like it at all.
It was a hodgepodge.
Yeah.
It was what it needed to be. I mean, you know, gotta love Frankie Avalon theme.
Do you?
Right.
I do. Did.
Do you have to? Do you have to, though?
Uh-oh, yeah, me and Ibbot are joining forces since we've just got back from Dragon Con and slept together right, for a few nights.
Joined like Voltron.
Yeah. I think Brian was patient zero. Everybody else didn't get it.
I was not.
No, not zero. this one. Oh, Dunaway. He's the carrier. He's the carrier, so everybody else got it but him.
Listen, I know I'm going to keep it to myself who I saw coughing and sneezing very early on in the conference that before I started feeling any symptoms.
Len Peralta.
Well, okay.
Come back to this sleeping together thing. What's that about?
They slid in the same hotel room and had man sex together.
Yeah, we watched movies all weekend. It was great. And we're not going to tell you guys anything about them.
Is that what man sex is? I was wondering.
We weren't clear. We were having a happy and gay time.
Yeah, yeah. What happened? What's this charge on my hotel bill? See what you two are up to. Anyway, so what else? Oh, let's get to the Twitter post. This is 140 characters or less. This is where you guys sum it up in said manner. Let's start with Randy.
Voyage to the bottom of the sea. A really groovy place where three dozen men are all cramped together with cigars, a parrot, a trumpet player, a shark, and precisely two women. So, just like Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Oh my gosh. You're right. There were only two women. They were constantly being ushered around to be safe. Get the women out of here. Put them in a safe place. And the congressman.
You don't have a parrot.
Yeah.
Cookie had a parrot. That was weird.
Yeah.
What did Cookie have a parrot for all of a sudden?
The first shot of Cookie, the parrot is a fake bird that is clamped onto his shoulder. There's dancing going on. That is a fake bird.
Yeah.
It's like in a 30-degree angle, not moving its head.
When I was younger, I always thought that Cookie was just a common name that people, you know, it was like if you got named Cookie, then that would end up being your career vocation. I didn't realize that was kind of like a thing.
Might be Larry, but as soon as you start cooking on the ship, you're going to be Cookie.
You called the Cookie, yeah. It's always, to me, it's a Western trope where the guy making the beans is always named Cookie.
Right. Unlike Jeeves, where if you name your child Jeeves, as Jerry Seinfeld said, you've condemned them to a life of servitude.
It's a pretty good joke. Next up, Brian Dunaway.
Voyage to the bottom of the sea, like Barbara Eden shaking her booty on a 50-foot screen. Mm. It's fun for about a minute. Dive! Dive!
Merp! Or merp, more like that. Finally, Brian Ibbot.
Voyage to the bottom of the sea. I can't believe we went through this entire episode without saying the words sweaty semen.
Oh, we did it.
Wow.
Wow.
What was your alternative? Because we might have just said it.
My alternative was Voyage to the bottom of the sea. This movie washed over me like I was a policeman sitting on the deck of a crash diving submarine.
Oh, they can swim. Don't
I did
worry
have
about
a
that.
Yeah, they're fine. Case we did say that.
That was great.
We're the greatest generation.
Sweaty semen.
Give them a 15-second warning that we're going to dive.
Yeah.
And then dive in like 7 seconds.
That was amazing.
They're not moving. I can't just swim, see them scrambling. Looking for a way off the boat. Let's go.
Hey, Randy.
Yes, sir.
All right, there you go. I just give you one of those.
I've turned you so far down, I could barely hear you tell me you were going to do something.
Let's get to just handed to me here, this alternate title. Right. Here's some Foley work. All right, here you go. Title almost made it was like Star Trek, only underwater and worse, or should have never picked up Alvarez. I think that's the one. That's the one. Hey, we got a phone call as our feedback this week.
All right.
Came to somebody who wants to discuss the issue of nail drivers from a previous episode.
Oh, God, come on.
Keeps coming up. Here it is. A minute long and a nice compliment. So here you go.
Aloha, Scott, Brian, Randy. This is Sean from White House, Tennessee. Sean spelled C-I-A-N. Brian Ibbot might know that spelling from me communicating with him a little bit about his show, Coverville. Been a fan since early Comsac.
Quit kissing up and get your question.
I'm calling because I'm just recently catching up on some of the episodes I've missed about Punisher 2004. So the reference to a pistol, a weapon, a gun, being a nail driver is about its accuracy. It's probably considered inside baseball for gun owners. And the deal is, let's say your gun is so accurate that if you hammer a nail partially into a board and then fire that weapon at that nail from 25 yards or so, that one shot will drive that nail into the board. Thus, your weapon is now a nail driver. That accurate. Anyway, love the show. Love you guys. Have a great one. Looking forward to the next episode.
He's being so nice, and we're over here.
Actually found that fascinating, snoring person.
Too, yes.
That is interesting, right? Mm-hmm. Shoot a gun, put the nail the rest of the way in. I would have had no idea without this call.
Right. Love if that is the real way you spell your name.
Yeah. Yeah.
The comparison for me is like a scene where dad takes a middle-aged badass son out to the garage to show him the new Ferrari. Check this out. It's a real lawnmower now.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's probably we live in the era where we should be able to find this information, but I really enjoy that kind of like obscure, descriptive, old-time talk stuff. Right. If there was a
because
way
I don't have to put that in my search history now. Thank you.
Yeah, that's right. The tracking thank everything you do, Brian.
True story.
So that you won't commit.
Sabotage.
All right.
Sabotage.
What's our next movie? I don't even know. What is it? Does anyone know? I don't know what
it
is. I can
tell you in 8 seconds.
Tell me in 8 seconds.
Ooh, 8 seconds. That'd be great.
Dive.
Let's not see 8 seconds. That movie sucks.
It's War of the Worlds in 1953.
Oh, wow. Look at us dipping way back.
You're going further back. And then after that, Red Dawn. Tank Girl,
mm-hmm.
American Psycho 2. I did not realize there was an American Psycho 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
National Treasure and Badass 2, all coming up on deck.
That sounds good.
Provided none of them get yanked from Netflix like a couple of policemen off the top of the deck of a police house.
Which will probably happen. Here's something to note or mention. Next week, yes, is indeed the War of the Worlds, okay? But after that, we'll have a little live commentary.
Yay!
Because one of us will be out of town that weekend. We want to make sure we have something up.
Who is it?
It's Brian Ebert.
Who dares miss an episode of Film Saturday?
No one dares. And then after that, we'll be on to those films, and hopefully nothing gets yanked. But yeah, that's the plan. I think War of the Worlds, that sounds great. That's a classic, man.
That does, yeah.
Great one.
And non-Tom
Cruise. I've watched that even for not for Film Sack, just because.
Just
because?
I've never seen the original. I've only seen the Tom Cruise one, so this will be good.
And I recommend for anyone who has access to it to listen to the musical version of The War of the Worlds that came out in the 80s and I think was put together by Justin, what's his name from the Moody Blues?
Robert Young. Justin Thoreau.
Jeff Wayne. Jeff Wayne put it together, but it had Justin Hayward from the Moody Blues, and it was great, and I think it's available on YouTube. It is. It's on YouTube. An hour and 35 minutes. Put it on the background while you're working. And
it's
great.
A musical? Oh, wow.
It is. Yeah, it's fantastic. And it's like, it was an album that that my uncle had as a kid, and I listened to it all the time. And it's told first person perspective from the main character, and it's fan freaking tastic.
Wow, I'm totally into that. And it's on YouTube, and get the whole thing there.
It's on YouTube. Just throw it, rip it to an MP3, put it in your car as you're driving around, or listen to it while
you're
working.
Simple as that.
Exactly. That's really cool. You will thank me later.
Okay. Right. I miss those kind of high concept albums. I wish more of that would happen now.
Yeah. Now, when y'all riff from YouTube, is there a website you guys use, or do you just like...
Let me tell you the one I use.
A sound recorder?
There's a lot of websites that will turn anything to MP3.com that you want.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're looking to clipconverter.cc, that'll work too.
See, I use an app on my iPad.
Oh, well, that'll work, too.
Oh, there's an iPad app? There's an app for that?
There's tons of them.
Next week, we'll get lots of emails.
Your Dropbox?
It's in the app, and you can then,
How do you export it out? Oh, email it or whatever. You'd probably put it in Dropbox if it's linked to the iOS 8 stuff, because you can add apps for saving, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're not, we don't condone.
No.
We're just saying that's, we've heard of this stuff. That's all.
Right. Not from us. No.
No. Clipconverter.cc. All right. Be done. Let's be out. I'm very excited about next week. We'll see you guys all there. Filmsack.com is the place to go. It's where we continue to talk and have conversations with you in the community. So please feel free to sign up for the blog and talk to us and say things about the shows that you've watched and listened to. Our voicemails can be sent to 801-471-0462. Email us filmsack@gmail.com on Twitter. We're @filmsack. And while you're at it, leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are distributed. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye.
Meh. Meh.
Shut up, you gold-breaking pipsqueak.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com. My final word to my friends on the show would be play Diablo 3 right now. It's never been better.